Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archive shows right there at the website. If you'd like to tune in, you certainly can. veritasmedical.com. Of course, along the way, phone lines will be open at all times. Text line available, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Right here, special guest on the program with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, today, Morley Robbins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wade.
How's everybody doing?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
Good to have y'all back on the show.
Good to have Morley in studio. Before we get started, I want to thank you for being here. I know y'all had a passing in the family, so condolences.
Thank you.
Melody and the whole family.
Yeah.
Sorry for your loss.
That funeral tomorrow at 2 o'clock. So I won't be here tomorrow, but today I slipped in here to do the show, and so glad, you know, that I'm here. Well, I wasn't going to be here, but now I am, so here I am.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's
love
all good.
Love and prayers to Melody.
Thank you so much for that.
All right. So we've got First Mondays with Morley. What, maybe start a new tradition here.
Yeah.
I think it was well, it's almost daily I get an article from Morley, but it was after one of my Monday shows a few weeks ago where Morley sent some articles about the thyroid. I think we'd mentioned thyroid on the show, and then the next week's show was we were talking about vaccine injury and autism and how to end the autism epidemic with J.B. Handley. If y'all didn't hear that show, I highly recommend you go back on the archives and listen. It was a fascinating show and a great book, and Morley followed that show up with another great article and comment about some things in relationship to autism. And we did talk about on that show that in J.B. Handley, one of his primary messages in the book is let's at least screen these kids, screen babies before we start injecting them with things, a day of life one. Because there's some babies that are going to be more at risk, and the babies that are going to be more at risk are the ones whose mitochondria appear to not be functioning very well. Mm-hmm. So if there's a mitochondrial disease, quote-unquote, or a mitochondrial issue or anything causing an inefficiency in the mitochondria, then these are the kids that are more prone to be injured. And, of course, it's a multifactorial issue there, as J.B. Handley talked about. His focus is on the vaccines, but, you know, why do some kids handle it or appear to handle it? It may be 10 years later where the side effects kick in. And some kids don't, but not just with vaccines, with things in general. Some people can tolerate certain insults and some people can't. And I go back to Weston A. Price in the 1920s, 1930s, and some of his research on root canals and the toxins that we know are produced by the anaerobic bacteria that are at the base of a root canal tooth. And he said, I think it was him or maybe Dr. Meenig, the guy that invented the root canal, said about 20% of the population could handle that root canal, meaning their immune system was capable enough, strong enough, or they just had enough internal support. Their body could deal with the toxicity coming out of that rotten, dead tooth. 20% of the population could. So we know the body's amazing. If it's equipped properly, it can take an insult. It can take a hit, and it can function still. The problem is the things that that the body is equipped with to put out fires of inflammation and oxidative stress, the things the mitochondria is equipped with to handle these insults have been impacted greatly by modern life and diet and stress. Mm-hmm. So we've got to equip the mitochondria. And if we can stop doing things that purposefully damage the mitochondria and really the body's way of defending itself, then maybe we can slow down on some of this overwhelming disease, including the autism epidemic. So we could go a lot of directions, Morley, and we'd love to take calls or text to listeners if y'all have questions. Morley is in studio, so we can read the text to him. But I'm thinking maybe, because I found it fascinating, the Tylenol aspect. When it comes to kids who are prone to having an injury from a vaccine, especially a brain injury, and the relationship that got identified with fever and with Tylenol and just So explain that, break that down a little bit for the listeners of how even acetaminophen, the ingredient Tylenol, can set a kid up for an injury.
Yeah, no, it's actually fascinating. So before I do that, let me create two images for people. One is we know that when you take the surface area of all the red blood cells in our body, we've got 34 sextillion.
So that's sextillion?
Yeah, that's
how many zeros is
24 zeros.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
But, and so, you know, what's really scary is I was thinking about, well, I wonder what the surface area of that is. Someone had actually done it.
Wow.
And the surface area of 34 sextillion red blood cells is 9/10 of an acre.
Oh, my.
So picture that as the iron load in your body, because that's where the iron hangs out, mm-hmm. is in the red blood cells. That's where 70% of it hangs out. Mm-hmm. So we've got this near acre of iron.
Wow. Acre of iron.
Acre of iron.
That's a new...
And it takes 90 milligrams of copper to regulate that near acre of iron. Now, how much is 90 milligrams? It's a penny. Mm-hmm. So put a penny in the corner of that acre, and it's managing the near acre of iron. So that's the amazing part about the human body.
I can't help but interrupt you. So, you know, reading some of these articles about the depletion of copper in our food, and some authors' conclusions are, oh, it's just a tiny depletion. It's only like a half a milligram. Well, when all you need in the entire body is 90 milligrams, if you miss even 1%, 2%, 5%, that has a huge potential impact. So,
what's a fever? A fever is a 4% differential.
Yeah.
And it's an enormous change in your body temperature.
A 4% change in copper in our food could have a humongous impact in the body. So back to 1 acre of iron and 1 penny of copper.
Right, 1 penny. So that, just have that image. And then there's this famous theologian. His name was William of Ockham. He was a mathematician. This is back in the 1200s, 1300s. And he was famous for his theorem. It's called Ockham's razor. He said, all things being equal, the simplest solution is best. So I don't want people to overthink this issue. So it's a very simple process. We've talked about it before. What is a cell, what is our body supposed to do? It's got to create energy and clear exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it's got to do.
Mm-hmm.
How does it make energy? Well, it makes energy from oxygen. It's got to activate that oxygen to turn it into water to release the ADP to go to complex 5. That's the purpose of the mitochondria, is to activate oxygen so that it can be released, so the ADP can be released to be made into the energy molecule magnesium ATP. It's a very basic function. So oxygen's in the center of that process. Clear exhaust. What is exhaust? They're called accidents with oxygen. And all of the free radicals, the reactive oxygen species, they're all based on oxygen.
Yeah.
And if complex 4 that is run by copper, it's got 3 copper atoms inside it, if the mitochondria senses that it can't do its job, it signals it to complex 3 that creates a superoxide radical. It says, sorry, we can't do it. And that's how the mitochondria create oxidative stress. They say, wait a minute, complex 4 is offline, can't work.
If we can't make this energy, we're going to just offload a humongous free radical.
Exactly.
It's going to blow this cell up if we can't deal with that free radical.
Right.
So I'm assuming the body has a way to deal with that free radical.
Yeah, and the way the body deals with that free radical is copper. So again, copper's creating energy. Copper is clearing exhaust. So just so people have this idea, so we have this near acre of iron, we got a penny in the corner, and we got to, don't overthink it, simplest solution is best, we got to create energy, clear exhaust, and then we come to vaccines. And what is different from person to person is how much copper and bioavailable copper is in their liver.
Bioavailable, meaning the copper is connected to something that allows it to to work the right way.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like a spark plug, just a spark plug on the shelf, but once it's connected and it's connected to the proper partners, and it can work right.
Absolutely. Copper needs proteins and enzymes to do its job.
Yeah.
So it's and so what many people don't know is that in the last trimester of a pregnancy, there's an enormous download of copper from the mom to the fetus's liver. And in fact, the fetus carries 10 times more copper in their liver than they will carry as an adult. Why would they have this enormous download of copper? Because they have no immune system for 2 years. Mm-hmm. What's the other key piece of the puzzle? Is retinol, the download for retinol is called breast milk. And that's delivered in the first 18 months to 2 years of life. Again, we've got the same window. So we've got copper in the liver, retinol in the breast milk, and those two work together to enable the infant to have an immune system. Mm-hmm. Because what does retinol do? It activates copper, makes it usable. And the chemistry between them is unbelievable. And in the modern era, which actually started in the 1930s. What happened in the 1930s? Two things, very important. They started pulling copper out of the food. That's the research of McCants and Wittison that you always reference. Mm-hmm. That the loss of copper in the food has been extraordinary. And the research that started in the 1920s about anemia with pregnant women led them to start to add iron to prenatals in the 1930s. That's when iron was first introduced in a supplemental form for the 1% of society that's pregnant. And that alters the biochemistry of the body of the mother and the fetus. Why? Because supplemental iron causes copper deficiency. So then the baby can't load copper properly if there's this agent, iron, that keeps getting introduced into the mom. So we have this critical but little discussed dynamic of what's the mom's mineral status when she got pregnant. And, you know, I've talked to moms who've had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, some who've had 10 children. And I just wonder, what's the viability of that number 9 or 10 child?
Yeah.
Because most women don't know that they have to completely rebuild their body in between pregnancies.
And ancestral groups around the world, when you study them historically, they would preferentially give the organ meats to
Absolutely.
The women of childbearing age, the organ meats having the copper and the key minerals.
And the key minerals. And so I think that begins to address why is there this variation between how children are able to weather the storm, mm-hmm. is that it apparently is a small subset, 20%, that has the requisite nutrients to be able to run their immune system. So that's one piece of the puzzle. Another is that vaccines, the schedule has changed. So I was born in 1952, and there were like a handful of vaccines.
Yeah.
A child today, 2018, they might, in the course of their lifetime, they might get exposed to 72 vaccines. Mm-hmm. Very different. The other is the use of multiple vaccines, which is it overwhelms the
at the same time on the same day, same administration time.
Right. Yeah, that's just too much. And if the infant or the child doesn't have enough capacity in their liver to metabolize that, it's too much. It just the system just fritzes out. So the study that I sent you was from William Shaw, who's the clinical director of the Great Plains Laboratory. And it's a fascinating study of what is the causative factor of autism. And, of course, there's all sorts of theories about free radicals and, you know, heavy metals and things like that. But what Dr. Shaw did, which was fascinating, was he compared the autism rate in Cuba to the United States. Now, most people don't know, there are a lot of people in Cuba. There are actually 11 million people that live in Cuba. I never knew it was that highly populated. So it's almost like about half the population of Florida, because I think Florida has about 25 million people. But what's interesting is both countries, Cuba and the United States, have mandatory vaccines. What's fascinating, though, is that Cuba has virtually no autism, and the United States, the latest figures are 1 in 59 to as high as 1 in 40. Apparently how you spin the numbers, you can get from 59 to 40. But the point is, in 1930, it was zero. When I was born in 52, it was 1 in 10,000. When you were born in, 74? 74, it was like 1 in 1,000?
1 in 5,000.
1 in 5,000.
Depending on the numbers you look at.
Okay. So there's been this acceleration from zero to now 1 in 40. And I think there's two dynamics taking place. One is the mineral erosion that's taking place in the soil, in the food, and in the animals, and in the humans. It's a known fact. It's been very well studied. But what Dr. Davis introduces, which I think is really important, is that there is a causative agent that's very disruptive to the child who's getting the vaccine, and it's called acetaminophen, Tylenol. And it turns out that when acetaminophen is administered to the child after the vaccine, basically their liver blows up. And that's what causes all the symptoms of autism. Basically, when you step away from autism, it's not a disease, but it's a spectrum disorder of iron-induced reactive oxygen species, oxidative stress. And then it begs the question, why? And it's absolutely fascinating. Again, the liver is a very copper-rich organ. Most people think it's iron. There's actually twice as much copper in the liver as there is iron. And the key antioxidant enzymes are coming out of the liver, and they're copper-dependent. And when you go inside the liver cell, the formal name for it is called hepatocyte. I don't know what hepato means, but it means liver, I guess, in some other language.
I'm sure Latin.
Latin. Mm-hmm. So be interesting to see what the actual translation would be of what does hepato mean. Yeah. But when you go inside a hepatocyte, the copper comes through the front door, and it's called CTR1, copper transporter 1, CTR1. It is a really important mechanism that allows copper into the cell. And there's a greeter at the door. You know, every fine restaurant has a maitre d'. Well, it turns out that the greeter in a liver cell is called glutathione. And we're like, wait a minute, glutathione's an antioxidant, right? Yeah, it's a very important antioxidant. Well, it turns out that unbound copper is an oxidative creator. It'll create oxidation.
If it's not bound properly to what it needs to be bound to, it can drive oxidative.
Right. Very, very important. But what's also important about glutathione is it needs to be recycled inside the cell. Most of what we regard as our metabolism is a recycling center. We recycle bone. We recycle cholesterol. We recycle glutathione. We recycle iron. All of these components that we've read about don't just come in and go out.
Right.
They get recycled and remade. Well, bottom line is, when you pull the curtain back, almost without exception, copper and retinol are the key agents for recycling. Mm-hmm. And in the case of glutathione, the recycler for glutathione is called glutathione peroxidase. It's a copper-dependent enzyme. It has a particular function for clearing hydrogen peroxide, which is a very caustic free radical in the body and in the tissue. And if glutathione peroxidase isn't present in the liver, then glutathione burns out.
It can't be recycled. So glutathione is the main fire extinguisher in these cells in the liver to put out, to deal with all these free radicals, oxidative stress, all the fires.
Yeah.
So when glutathione goes to put the fire out, glutathione peroxidase enzyme recycles the glutathione so it can get back in the fight and go put out some more fires. So yeah. If the recycler is offline, you run out of glutathione, you run out of fire extinguishers, basically.
Yeah. And so what Dr. Davis figured out is that when acetaminophen gets converted, the metabolite that's created from acetaminophen kills glutathione peroxidase.
So as the liver is breaking down the Tylenol that the child just ingested,
right,
the byproducts of this Tylenol breakdown shut down the recycler,
yeah,
of your main fire extinguisher.
And what that leads to is the glutathione gets used up because there's lots of toxins in that vaccine.
Yeah.
And if the body loses its ability to clear those toxins, to clear the exhaust, mm-hmm, then it gets overwhelmed with the oxidative stress that starts to affect digestive pathways, neurotransmitter pathways, behavioral pathways, and those are all the characteristics of autism.
Right. And the brain is such an energetic organ. It should have some very, very efficient mitochondria that can really make energy well, but also really clear the exhaust well. So if that mitochondria is not capable of doing that in the brain, then obviously tremendous impact and significant symptoms can come from that. So that's what we said at the very top of this discussion. There's kiddos who are prone or predisposed to have an inefficient mitochondria. If we could screen for, somehow identify these, then potentially we could save some of these kids and families the devastation of these symptoms, which tend to be permanent, although you can get some improvement if you can do some things nutritionally and biomedical technology is what J.B. Hanley calls it, but there is hope for these autistic kids. But the best hope is don't get in that position in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Meaning don't challenge your mitochondria like that. If the mitochondria is already set up to not be able to handle all these fires, and then you're going to give Tylenol that takes out the main fire extinguisher recycler, I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster. And I don't know how many times I advise parents back in the old days to even pre-medicate. Don't wait for the fever after the vaccine. Just pre-medicate, preload. I mean, I did it on some of my own kids early on, too.
Yeah, but who knew?
Yeah.
So the thing is, what's really key in this whole process is the synapse. That's a very sensitive part of the brain function, just to build on what you were saying about
where two nerves come together.
Yeah.
Synapse. Yeah.
So you're talking about the brain being a really oxidative organ. It is the most oxidative organ in the body. So the brain consumes or represents about 2% of the body weight of the body, but it consumes 20% of the oxygen of the body.
Oh.
And it also has 25% of the cholesterol of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the part that's fascinating about the brain. 99% of that cholesterol is recycled. You don't get it through your diet.
Yeah.
When does that download of cholesterol rich brain matter take place? First 2 years of the baby's life. Where's he getting the cholesterol? Breast milk.
Who's eating a low cholesterol diet, low fat diet?
Just about everybody.
Mineral depleted diet.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the cholesterol comes via mom through the download. And what's really important for both the synapse, that meeting of the minds, if you will, literally meeting of the minds, well, that's a copper-driven function.
Mm-hmm.
The synapse is copper-driven. Then we find out that everyone puts the spotlight on the neuron because that's where the thinking takes place, right? Well, there's two parts to that. One is there's a cell, brain cell, called an astrocyte. I always think of the Houston Astros. But astrocyte, copper-driven cell.
Of course, yeah, naturally.
Of course. And the astrocyte is making the energy for the neuron, and the astrocyte is recycling the goodies for the neuron, so that all the neuron has to do is think.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any work.
Yeah.
It just thinks all day long.
Just transmits those signals. Boom, boom, boom. And astrocytes over there doing all the work.
Astrocytes doing all the work. No one knows about it. It's behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And then the nerve has something called a myelin sheath.
It's an insulation around the nerve.
Right. Well, guess what? 70% of the cholesterol in the brain is going to make myelin sheath.
Mm-hmm.
Who's making the myelin sheath? It's a cell called the oligodendrocyte. Don't you love these words?
It's a great hangman word.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. What does the oligodendrocyte absolutely have to have in order to make the myelin sheath? Only two things.
Copper and retinol.
Copper and cholesterol.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. And so the other part of this, though, is there needs to be a recycling program in the brain to turn over the cholesterol, right? To turn over the brain tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is called autophagy, eating itself.
Mm-hmm.
The brain, and what's really important is that there, as the baby goes from birth to year two, there are just bazillions of synapses that are created. But what's supposed to
happen? How many zeros are in a bazillion?
I don't know.
Okay,
a lot.
I just had to throw
it
out.
It's Texas big. I know
gotcha.
That. Yeah. But the thing is, what the baby is supposed to be able to do is it needs to eat up those synapses
mm-hmm.
and remove them. Well, in the autistic brain, can't do that.
Yeah.
That's why they're hyperactive.
Yeah.
Because they've got too many synapses because their autophagy system isn't working.
Yeah, their recycling system's just offline.
The recycling system's offline because the child was raised in a retinol and copper deficient environment.
Yeah. So real quick before we go to the break and after the break, I think maybe we'll try to hit some thyroid stuff.
That's fine.
But we've been hammering on copper and retinol. But bioavailable copper, I want to remind the listener, especially if you're a new listener, don't just run out to the health food store and pull copper off the shelf. That's typically an elemental copper, a form of copper that's not a whole food-based or a bioavailable type of copper.
Right.
A copper that the body can recognize better and utilize better would be found from food, and the best source of that is organ meats, particularly liver, like grass-fed beef liver. And I know a lot of people turn their nose up at that. So there are capsules of it. It's not as good, though. It's better to do the real thing. And then retinol is vitamin A, but it's an animal-based form of vitamin A, not vitamin A from the plant, which would be the carotenoids like beta-carotene, but vitamin A from animal sources. So that would be like a pasture-raised egg, for example, or cod liver oil is probably your best source quantity-wise.
Right.
And historically, it's what a lot of our great-grandparents used to take. So there's where you
too.
Get it.
And that retinol.
Right.
The highest source of retinol is organ meat.
That's right.
Liver.
Yep. I mean, the organ meats just really have it all. I mean, if you had to choose one thing to eat or take
right.
or consume, because there's B vitamins in the organ meats.
Absolutely.
There's the copper. There's
high
the retinol.
Highest source of catalase.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Highest source of hyaluronic acid.
So we all need to just pinch our nose and eat the beef liver.
That's right.
Well, how often, though? I mean, yeah.
How deficient are you?
Well, yeah, I mean, is it, you know, people might say, well, gee whiz, what about, twice a week? Or
well, I think, again, I always look back ancestrally or historically, and, you know, everybody used to eat their liver on Sunday, I think. Liver and onions with their grandma.
That's right.
So probably once a week, 4 or 5 or 6 ounces back in the day probably was adequate. But if you're super deficient and if you're not getting it from any other source, really, because the vegetables are so depleted of copper in particular, you know, maybe more than that. But
well, I supplement the ever since I've been listening to Morley over the years and hearing his testimony, I started taking the beef liver tabs, and I take them every day.
Yeah.
Is that too much?
No, that's perfect. That's fine.
Is that okay? I take 3 of those tabs a day.
Yeah, that's great.
And, I'll tell you, they're kind of hard to swallow. I mean, and I don't have problems with pills, but every once in a while I get one lodged there. I'm like, oh, more water. But I take 3 of them a day.
Yeah, that's
roughly.
Good.
That's
good. So cod liver oil, beef liver, those are two practical ways to get the copper and the retinol back in, which will help all these cells work better, recycle things better, and that mitochondria to make energy and clear exhaust, which is what it's all about. And we've talked about many times on the show, pretty much every quote-unquote disease now. There's a book coming out saying how it's a mitochondrial disease.
Right.
Whether we're talking about Alzheimer's is a mitochondrial disease, or cancer is a mitochondrial disease, even heart disease is a mitochondrial disease. The inability to make adequate energy or clear exhaust adequately will result in symptoms that will label as a disease. So ancestrally, we didn't see these diseases. Weston A. Price didn't see these diseases when he traveled the world in 1920s and 30s, studying 14 different people groups from around the world. They didn't have these diseases until they started eating like Westerners.
Right.
Then he started to see some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Clavey, famous copper researcher, just to pick up on your issue about the heart, there are 80 anatomical, chemical, and physiological defects in the heart from copper deficiency.
Unbelievable.
And he's the one that really said, you know, it's the simplest explanation for what appears to be disease is a lack of copper. And what you do is you replace the copper, and all those symptoms go away.
Mm-hmm.
That's been his theme for the last 40 years.
That's amazing. We better take a break, though, and we'll talk thyroid and whatever else y'all want when we come back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for archived programs, past programs. You can certainly check it out there at veritasmedical.com. Right here on the show, Morley Robbins here on the program, and right back at it. We're going to talk thyroid next.
Yes, we are. I know it's hard to believe, but when we were off air, guys, Morley didn't just want to talk about the weather and baseball. So, or basketball season, I guess, where we're at now. But, so I just have to share with y'all, and then we'll get to thyroid, what Morley just shared with me and just sent me an article on during the break. Glyphosate, which we all understand, I believe, around here, that's the main ingredient in Roundup, which is sprayed on Roundup Ready cotton. And we've talked about glyphosate ad nauseum, but I just have to throw this because Morley informed us here that glyphosate chelates copper. Chelate in the Greek means to claw or to grab and hold on to and not let go of. So glyphosate's going to grab the copper and not let go of it, but then so therefore it's not available for your body to use. But then that combination of copper and glyphosate together creates a more highly toxic, damaging substance in the body than just glyphosate by itself.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, so try to avoid the glyphosate if possible.
But how do you detox off something like that?
Actually, that's a really good question, Wade. I was at a conference with my wife. It was a chiropractic conference. And one of the best detoxers for glyphosate is apple cider vinegar.
Really?
With the mother. You got it. Make sure it's got the mother.
So the raw, with the probiotics in it.
Exactly. But there's,
they call it with the mother?
With the mother.
It's so you'll see at the bottom of the jar this cloudy, moldy, bacterial-looking
the best form is it's called Bragg's, B-R-A-G-G.
Oh, really?
Bragg's apple cider vinegar. And I can't think of the chemical right now, but there's a chemical in apple cider vinegar that absolutely will chelate the glyphosate out.
Wow, good to know.
Huh.
I'll get you the name of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's dive into thyroid because it's such a common set of symptoms that patients walk in with. You know, cold hands, cold feet, cold in general, hair and nails that are brittle and falling out and thin, and inability to lose weight, fatigue. All these are low thyroid symptoms. Even if your blood test says you're normal, it's something that you still could be suffering from. The blood tests aren't all that accurate. If your body temperature is always low, a degree or two low, that's a good diagnostic indicator. But so the majority of patients walking in our door have these symptoms.
Right.
And we used to just put them on some thyroid medication. Sometimes we still will if it's indicated. But we've actually had 4 or 5 or 7 or 8 now ladies come off their thyroid medication when they mineralized properly.
Exactly.
Which a lot of natural-leaning folks will think about iodine, maybe iodine and selenium, to mineralize the thyroid gland itself to try to induce it to kick into gear and make more thyroid. But there's so many pieces of this thyroid equation, including the thyroid receptor and the ability to convert thyroid from inactive to active and Inflammation will shut this process down. So anyways, thyroid's a big topic. A lot of natural practitioners are giving thyroid medications and iodine out. But give us some of your thoughts on thyroid, Morley.
Yeah, I started studying thyroid when I learned that half the adult population in America was taking Synthroid. And that just didn't.
Which is a prescription synthetic thyroid hormone.
Levothyroxine.
Yep.
And I spell it S-I-N, thyroid, Synthroid. Because that doesn't make sense. Half the adult population can't make their thyroid work. So that means that something's awry. And then what we've got to be careful of is we know that there's a difference between causation and correlation.
Right.
Right? And what's happened is, particularly in the world of conventional healing, is that every anomaly in the body has been correlated back to the thyroid.
Yeah.
But is the thyroid really causing the problem, or a dysfunctional thyroid? So do flies cause garbage? No, of course not. And so I think there's a lot of confused thinking. And when you're using examples of cold hands, cold feet, the enzyme that actually regulates the body temperature in the periphery, its nickname is called PAM. The PAM enzyme comes out of the hypothalamus. It's a copper-dependent enzyme. And if PAM's not happy, body temperature's not happy. It has nothing to do with the thyroid. It's just been ascribed to the thyroid so they can, you know, connect it. Brittle nails. Again, it has more to do with collagen and silica in your diet than it does your thyroid. So I think there's been a lot of confusion. I'll agree with you about the body mass and, you know, the energy levels, things like that. But again, energy level, we're back to creating energy, right?
Yeah, energy and exhaust.
So we got to be able to create the energy. We got to be able to work with the oxygen. Turns out that the thyroid is a really important oxygen sensor in the body. That's really what the thyroid hormone is. It's an oxygen sensor. Hmm. Totally changes everything when you realize, wait a minute, it's trying to see, not just do we have enough oxygen, can we metabolize the oxygen? Can we activate it? That's the key. That's what the thyroid's supposed to be doing, saying, do we have the ability to do that? And it's absolutely fascinating that what's the mineral that works in a positive way with oxygen? It's copper. Hands down, iron does not work with oxygen. It carries it. It transports it. But it doesn't play with it nicely. It causes rust.
Right.
And so copper is absolutely essential. And as I'm piecing it together, there's so much confusion about the thyroid because people don't understand oxygen. They don't understand copper. They don't understand ceruloplasmin, which is the protein that really is so important for copper to do its work. But it turns out, again, thyroid hormone, it's really focusing on fat metabolism and oxygen metabolism. Well, what's the mineral that's required for fat metabolism? It's called copper. The whole series of enzymes are called beta-oxidation enzymes. And if the mitochondria can't do beta oxidation, it has to go offline. That's another part of this mitochondrial disease. Why would the mitochondria have to work with fat? Because it's got to make cardiolipin. And copper is involved in cardiolipin recycling. We're back to the recycling program again. Mm-hmm. So again, so much confusion, but getting down into the weeds of the thyroid, there's a very important transport protein called TTR, and it stands for transthyretin. Well, trans for transport, thy for thyroxine,
retin. Which is thyroid hormone.
Yeah. What's retin? Well, it's short for retinol. So if TTR can't be made, you can't transport the hormone. If you don't have retinol, there's no TTR. So if you're eating a low-fat diet because you are either afraid of fat or you are sucking down vitamin D because there's no tomorrow,
supplemental vitamin D shuts down retinol production.
Right. What it does is not just its production, but it clears it out of storage sites in the cell. Mm. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
So we've heard the expression, America runs on Dunkin'. We love our coffee. Well, the liver runs on retinol. And if you don't have enough retinol in your liver, then a lot of bad things start to happen. So TTR, very important component. Well, then let's go inside the nucleus of the thyroid cells. That's kind of an interesting deep dive. Well, it turns out that what runs the nucleus are nuclear receptors. They don't work without nuclear receptors.
So little keyholes on the nucleus.
Yeah.
In the thyroid cell.
And what has to happen is the thyroid receptor needs to marry the RXR receptor to activate the thyroid response element to make the thyroid hormone. So if TR isn't connected to RXR,
which is a retinol-based receptor,
right, then you don't have a hormone production.
So you've got two keyholes coming together. Both have to be online together, and both keys have to fit into that. So retinol and this TTR, which is the thyroid retinol combination.
Right. And so that's a critical pivot point that missing in most people's diet is retinol. Mm-hmm. So they don't have enough RXR to do what it's supposed to be doing. And so then the production of the hormone goes south. Then, here's the mind-blowing part, as if that wasn't enough, right? So it turns out that what's the thyroid really doing? It's sensing oxygen. Do we have enough copper to do this? Again, we're back to copper and retinol.
Right.
Copper and retinol. And so the thyroid is sensing, do we have enough capacity to work with the oxygen? And if it senses that it doesn't, it increases the synthesis of ceruloplasmin. That is the hidden job of the thyroid.
Okay, so I have a question. that's pretty.
Ceruloplasmin being the transport protein needed to make copper bioavailable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Usable, basically.
Yeah. Okay, so my wife, she, about two years ago, went to a general practice top doctor, and she was having this little thing in her throat. Like it felt like she couldn't swallow, or like I was telling you about those beef liver tabs.
Yeah,
sometimes I feel like, oh, it hangs in my throat. So she goes to this other ENT, and this doctor says, well, I'm going to run a scope down there. I'm going to take a look. And of course, they didn't find anything. And then it kind of went away and on its own, and now it's back. And so I'm wondering if that could have any, or what you're talking about affects any of that as far as the thyroid, and why she has this sensation in the throat area. It really is bothering her because she's like, I feel like I'm constantly gagging on something when nothing's really there.
Right.
What is that?
It's a stress response. Let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
So there's a famous physician from famous Viennese physician. His name was Dr. Fiedler. He loved the heart, and he's the guy that came up with the following model.
Well, there's been a lot of stress around her lately.
Right. Okay.
Do you think that might have cranked it off?
I don't think it. I know it.
Okay.
So let me walk you through the model. This model was developed in 1899 by a guy named Dr. Fiedler, and stress causes magnesium loss. Magnesium loss causes electrolyte dysfunction. Electrolyte dysfunction causes energy loss. Energy loss causes cell death. And then there's two bodily processes that come into play. There's called inflammation. And what does the body do? It turns on the fire to eat up the dead tissue. And it's supposed to then flip out of inflammation and go back to fibrosis, which is laying down new tissue. Okay? That process of stress response, first documented in 1899, happens whether the stress is spraying glyphosate in the air, eating a bad diet, having a loved one die, being in a car accident. The exact same stress response happens in the body. So a guy named Hans Selye came along in the 1930s through 70s. He wanted to see if Fiedler was right. Well, Selye is known as the father of stress, and he did 30,000 animal experiments during the course of his life, wrote 45 textbooks, and published 750 articles. The guy was a machine. But what he proved, beyond any indication of doubt, that when an organ, a gland, or whatever part of your anatomy is under stress, it swells and then it collapses. So the stress comes and there's an initial reaction, especially in the endocrine glands. The endocrine gland that can't metabolize it, what it's supposed to be metabolizing, will start to swell and enlarge. And again, he proved this over 30,000 different experiments, and he would use different agents, and then over an extended period of time, at some point, the gland just collapses. So I think that may be part of the explanation for Hashimoto's. I think the tissue just starts to collapse on itself. Mm. But that's very likely what's happening.
And so the that's the diagnosis, and then what's the treatment?
Well, you got to deal with the stress.
Okay.
And then, of course, we talk about the root cause protocol.
Okay.
And what the
and
root
she
cause-
knows that because she's taken your course.
Right. And so what happens is smart people overthink things. They forget about Occam's razor. They forget about the acre of iron and the copper penny regulating it. And they start to think they have a disease, and they start to get afraid. And when they get afraid, they start to attract iron, and the iron starts to whip up more oxidative stress. It just becomes a flywheel for chaos.
It really starts to snowball on itself. Yeah. From the emotional standpoint.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're all living under some amount of stress, and that obviously can go up at times, but then that fear factor kicks in, and that's huge.
Yeah, and when the thing is, the people who are drawn to the type of discussion that we're having on this show are high IQ, you know? That you have to have high IQ to be able to understand counterintuitive logic and countercultural recommendations. What are Dr. Ben and I pushing? We're pushing beef liver, cod liver oil, you know.
Not vitamin D.
Not vitamin D. And that's like, wait a minute. So the people who are listening right now have passed the IQ test, but people with high IQ have two genetic defects. We're control freaks, right? And we love complexity. And we've been taught that our illnesses, whatever's going on with our body, it's got to be complicated when, in fact, it's Occam's razor. It's missing copper or retinol. And what happens is people who are smart overthink it. And when does stress begin for smart people? When they feel out of control.
Yeah.
That's when stress starts
for us.
They
can't figure it out.
Can't figure it out. And they follow the instructions of what they read on some internet article, or they take their doctor's advice because they think that that has some semblance to the truth, when in fact it doesn't. And so when they follow the instructions and it doesn't work, then they start to doubt themselves. They think, my body's broken because the internet told me to do this, or my doctor told me to do this. I did exactly what I was supposed to do. I'm getting worse. And that's when the flywheel of fear starts to kick in.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah.
And I can't
Good
tell
point.
You.
Great point.
The number of patients we see, new patients walking in, who have felt really just run over, not listened to, or even mishandled by some well-meaning conventional doctors, but that exact thing of I did everything they told me to do.
Right.
And these are really hurt, damaged folks and really sick. And then it's such a hurdle to jump over for them when I start to explain, listen, it boils down to these pretty simple steps. And, you know, you've got to teach through that and try to convince them. And the simple steps are basic stuff. And that's why I love Weston A. Price. Weston A. Price, the dentist in the 20s, 30s, he was observing, just pure observation. Hey, there's more sick people starting to show up in my office here in Detroit or wherever he was.
Cleveland.
Yep. In the 1920s. So then he sailed around the world to study people groups that weren't sick. And it was all observation. So he didn't know all the enzyme names and all the complexities of the biochemistry that now we're starting to see and understand by the synthesis of all this literature and new stuff coming out today even.
Do you know what sparked his passion? He did a root canal on his son. His son was 11 years old. Guess what happened? His son died.
Wow.
And that's what drove him to find out what happened.
Wow.
It was a personal tragedy that threw him into that whole process. I just learned that recently.
Wow.
So the simplicity of what Weston A. Price observed and then teaches kind of in his book and the Weston A. Price Foundation, it's an ancestral eating plan, but it's focused on animal-based retinol, really, is what we're getting down to, and minerals, too. Yep. And that's what he found, that these ancestral cultures or native cultures had, I think it was 10 times more fat-soluble vitamins and 4 times more minerals in their diet than the 1920 American diet,
right?
Much less the 2020 American diet.
Exactly.
So it's this real basic, kind of simple, get back to eating and living how we used to.
Right.
But also, here's all the research, and here's all the science, and here's all the dots being, it can't be true. And
right.
So there's this intuitive, let's get back to live and eat how we used to. But also, here's all the research, and here's all the science, and here's all the dots being connected, if you need that kind of intellectual proof. But it still boils back down to the ability to trust the design of the body, get the basics nailed down really in the emotions. And that's where we have the four pillars: nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace.
Yeah.
It boils down to these basic things. But we've got to, it's nice to connect the dots in the literature so that you can even be at peace with this quote unquote simple root cause protocol and simple four pillars and this simple, could that really help my X, Y, or Z disease?
Yeah. And like you say, you've got a number of people who are coming off their thyroid medication. We've got people worldwide, completely, you know, people that were bedridden for 25 years back at work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just some amazing success stories following this simple protocol.
Well, it's fascinating and it's great. A lot of people are being helped. And we need that because this American healthcare system is in a dire situation of self-imploding on itself financially, and not just financially, but outcomes-wise. Medical outcomes just aren't good.
The system is missing a mineral foundation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You've got to have the minerals foundationally, and it's stress and a stressful diet that's robbing you of these minerals and not nourishing you back up. So, of course, try to deal with your stressors, but at the same time, equip the body with the ability to handle the stressors.
Exactly.
Get the retinol, the vitamin A in, get the copper in. So eat your beef, liver, whole food vitamin C has copper, pasture-raised eggs, grass-fed meats, wild-caught meats, lamb, and some of these other meats that you might not think of besides beef are very, very good, too.
Well, you'll love this real quick. So the enzyme that's at the center of the whole food vitamin C is called tyrosinase. Okay, it's also called polyphenol oxidase. Okay, and I found a reference recently on neonatology from the 50s. It was referred to as thyroxinase. So thyroxinase became tyrosinase. That implies that thyroxinase, this whole food vitamin C, must be pretty important for the thyroid.
Yeah.
Right? And in fact, what's it delivering? Copper. Why would that be important? Because the thyroid doesn't work without copper.
Yep.
It's amazing.
It's really cool to see it all connect like that. Thank you for scouring the literature for us, Morley. Give out your websites or ways for people to follow you and your latest research who don't get a daily email from you like I do. Or two or three.
A good website to go to now is called rcp123.org. It's a completely revamped website. We've converged a lot of information. You can download the manual. You'll get we give away the answer. We give away the stops and the starts. If you're interested in an online experience or Facebook social media experience, we have both the Magnesium Advocacy Group and page. And depending upon which side of the fence you want to play on, but there's a lot of good information on both of those sites. So that'll keep people busy.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it and enjoy it.
RCP123.org?
.org, absolutely.
RCP123.org. Yeah, okay. I'll check that out. Thanks, Morley.
You bet.
Dr. Edwards, appreciate it. Of course, y'all have a wonderful rest of the week. You've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, M.D. We'll see you back here next Monday on the show.